And he has chosen to speak to us this afternoon on the subject, Peacemakers in Zion. Peacemakers in Zion. So we'd like to now turn the meeting over to Brother Buckley.
Thank you, Brother Lolly. Very happy to be with you, to rejoice with you, to bring the Christian love and greetings of the dear ones from Jackson, from Charlotte, and also the beloved from East Lansing, dear beloved Sister Cox and Sister Snow. And if any of you at any time are up around East Lansing, and get over on the Lake Lansing Road, Provincial House, there, these two beloved sisters, Sister Cox, 95, Sister Snow, 90 years old. Believe me, brethren, you will not go away without a blessing, a precious blessing. Today, the Ecclesia is the subject all day. We have found our beloved brother, our Jesuit, already covered the subject. Leaves very little for me left to say, and yet, by the Lord's grace, I have the opportunity to say it. We thought we might consider peacemakers in Zion. Peacemakers are few and they're far between. There's a good reason for that, because it is not easy to be a peacemaker. You've seen the picture, if you will, or the illustration in which someone steps in between two that are fighting and he gets hit from both sides and knocked out. Trying to be a peacemaker. What we're saying is to be a peacemaker is not only hard, but it's dangerous. You could get hurt by both sides. So make up our minds if indeed we would want the role of a peacemaker, then we know what to expect. Peacemakers in Zion. We try so to be, then indeed we will suffer therefore. But then we think of the scripture so beautifully put by our beloved Master in the Beatitudes, Matthew 5:9. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the sons of God. Now we put with that another scripture, which is found in 1 John, the 3rd chapter, first verse. Beloved, now are we the sons of God. If then we are the sons of God, we are peacemakers. Or are we? This is the question. I've tried to be a peacemaker and yet at the same time have failed every time. I had an opportunity very recently. This is the reason I've been thinking about peace. Something the world indeed is thinking about, talking about. But doing something, well, this is a different matter. But in my case, my neighbors who live to the north of me are a young couple, just old enough, so for the past 8 years, they've been rather noisy, but we put up with it for 8 years. And I, being one to go along with the tide and feel that, well, let be. My beloved daughter, living with her window where it is, her room to the north, and hearing all this after so long a time, finally, and this year, she made up her mind that enough is enough. He said, Dad, what are we going to do about it? Well, they just go over the noise in, you know? This is what I felt. But not the way she felt. She said, enough is enough. And she said, everybody's afraid of them, but I'm going to do something. So she called the sheriff's department. Sheriff's department said, we can come up and we can tell them to quiet down. But whoever comes will make the decision whether or not it's too loud. And it's a hairline decision. Well, the next time it happened, she called the police department, and they came up. And when they came up, things got a little rough around there for a little while. But it was quiet. But on the same day, they started in again, and they defied my daughter indeed. The second time, again, they were rather obnoxious, if we want to put it that way. And they took it out on my daughter Susie. My daughter Evelyn, the oldest one, is the one who would call the police. But Susie kind of got the brunt of that. Well, this is in one day. Well, after about so long a time, all was well. Until I had gone to the Chicago convention. While I was gone, it happened again. This time my daughter called the police. And this time, all's well. But still, one more time before, finally, the neighbors have been very good. But where was Brother Buckley when all this was going on? He who should have been a peacemaker. Well, I was here and I was there and I just wasn't around. So, what's to be said? I stand here speaking about peacemaking, and what kind of a peacemaker am I? So, brethren, what I say to you, I say to me more so in that, by His grace, I would like to be a peacemaker. We look at it from the standpoint of saying, well, now here, we're in an ecclesia. We are in a community with one another. We are in a body. Body that reflects the Master. What can we contribute? We can study and we can find all these things about Revelation, whatever else have you, the tabernacle, you name it. We can contribute that way. Yes, we can. We can contribute in many ways, brethren. Many, 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 many ways. What would be the best way? How about being a peacemaker? Do we need one? Well, are we a class whereby we have our little rumblings, the little problems, and so on and so forth? Well, I think every one of us examine ourselves and examine our ecclesia, we'll find that we do have one little problem once in a while. Maybe sometimes more than once in a while. But what we need is a peacemaker. Who's going to be it? Well, we'd like to think we're all peacemakers. That's what we would like to think. But it is not always so. Bearing that in mind then, brethren, consider, if you will, with me, what peacemaking is, how it's to be done, and whether or not we can accomplish it, and if indeed, in fact, it's necessary. We would like to begin by considering something that our Master said to natural Zion, Israel. The words are found in Luke, the 19th chapter, and the 42nd verse. And this is indeed a heart-rendering time because the Master must pronounce upon Israel, "Behold, your house is left unto you desolate." But what we're interested in is the words he first spoke when he beheld the city and wept over it. These were his words. Oh, if only thou hadst known, at least in this thy day, the things that belong to thy peace. Think about that, brethren. Our beloved Master, having to do what he must needs do, the first words he uttered were, if you'd only known the things belong to your peace. And if they had, things would have been entirely different, but they didn't know. The things that belong to peace, we feel that we do, is simply a matter of whereby all is calm, all is quiet. There's no agitation. There's no problems. That's peace. And we think, well, as far as Israel is concerned, if they just known that, period. But think about it again. This time, nominal, spiritual Zion, if you please. Nominal, spiritual Israel. Think of the words again. Brother Russell considers this on page 1846. For the reprints. Again, the words pronounced, if you will. Oh, if only thou had known in least in this thy day the things that belong to thy peace. Pronounced upon nominal spiritual Israel in 1874, if you please, the time when no longer the call of the bride was heard in her, when they were cast off. Ah, but again, the words come to us. Ask ourselves, do we know the things that belong to our peace? As spiritual Mount Zion, this side the veil. To consider that, we first have to know what we're talking about. Peace and what it means. Just what do we have on our mind? To have true peace, the first thing needed is to recognize, to realize that we're not at peace with ourselves because we are not at peace with God. The simplicity of it. We go to the Scriptures. And there we read in the 38th chapter of Psalms, the third verse. And this we should realize and recognize. There is no soundness in my flesh because of thine anger. In other words, we're not at peace with God. Neither is there any rest in my bones because of my sin. Or as the margin says, peace in my bones because of sin. I am not at peace with myself. Well, in order to become a peacemaker, in order to be a use to those with whom we meet, we first had to realize that we must have peace with God. And so we find that in so doing, by recognizing the Master, recognizing He died for us, He took our place in death and accepting Him, that we then go to the fifth chapter of Romans in the first verse, where it says simply, therefore, being justified by faith, we have peace with God. Ah, this is the peace that we need. But turn with me, if you will, to the 34th chapter of Psalms, the 14th verse. Depart from evil and do good. Seek peace and pursue it. Having peace with God, and then realizing, understanding that justification is given to us for a purpose, that we may give our little all to Him, to follow in the Master's footsteps, that we might have the peace of God. But we look at this word peace, we find in the 34th chapter of Psalm 14th verse. Seek peace. What kind of peace? Again, is it tranquility and quietness? Is that what it is? What is it? Well, it is the peace of God. What does it amount to? If you would look at the board, you will find here what we believe the Old Testament word peace, shalom, truly means. What the peace of God truly means. What the peace is that Israel did not realize. Did not realize that it was a peace that belonged to them if they had followed and hearkened the word of God. The peace of God, the peace which we find in Philippians 4:7, the peace of God which passes all understanding, contained these seven elements. First, we find health. And we look at Israel, and we find that they did not realize that their health indeed stemmed from the following and the obedience of God. Safety. Again, God told them they would be safe under His wings. again they would not hearken and obey. Soundness. This is a matter of health not only physically but mentally. Oh, this is what was promised to Israel. Part of the things that belonged to their peace, but they did not realize it. Welfare. It was the welfare of Israel he had in mind, and they did not realize it again. God was concerned about them as His. Friendship with God, another part of the peace that we have in mind when we speak of seeking peace. That's the peace Christ spoke of when He said, if you'd just known that which belonged to thy peace. Confidence. Confidence, trust in God. Finally, completeness. In every way, in everything, Israel would have been at peace because God was watching over them. But these are the things they could not realize, they could not understand, they could not see. This, beloved brethren, is the peace we have in mind. And as we consider peacemaking, we want to consider that this is a kind of peace that is embodied. We're told in John, the 14th chapter, and 27th verse, something which is, in a way we sort of escapes us, and still at the same time we accept it and rejoice in it and feel that we have it. And it is this which the Master told us. Speaking to the disciples, and notice the words that He used. Peace I leave with you. Now, if we recall, brethren, the Master died shortly thereafter. He did not speak of His death here, but He said, peace I leave with you. The pastor suggests, very good indeed to consider. I never thought of the thought had never crossed my mind before. But he points out, this is what the Master left as a legacy to His disciples. Peace. That's which they would have would be theirs. And that not only that, they could not have it fully until He died. It was a bequest. It was a legacy. It was that which the Master left that could be used after He died. Now this is a point well taken. That peace, from the time that He died, His disciples from that time forward, up to this day, have that peace which Christ left to His followers. Brother Russell suggests that Christ could have worked and earned an enormous amount of money. The money could have been left when He died. And that from that time forward could have been used in the work. It could have been used to help to take care of those who were His followers and so on. But He didn't do that. He left peace. His peace. The kind of peace that we have here. And when we speak of that peace, those things which we have on the board, it is in a spiritual way. For each one of us, for us as an ecclesia, if you will, health, safety, soundness, welfare, friendship, confidence, completeness, all these things comprise the peace which He left us. Now, if we could only be aware of that fact, so to be a peacemaker, to truly be a son of God, to be able to make peace when needed, especially among one another. Three things First, we have to consider self. We can't just say, forget yourself. We have to consider self. We have to consider what our part in it all is. We have to consider our sincerity. And we will note that the theme text that I have, Blessed are the Peacemakers, is the seventh beatitude. The sixth, the one that is before that, is Blessed are the Pure in Heart. Sincerity, if you will, brethren. So, sincerity is necessary. To be sincere. And finally, the third, to sacrifice. Sacrifice our own wants and desires the way we think it should be whenever it is necessary. Those things to be borne in mind. We would like to be builders in Zion if we can. To building up one another. This is what our desire is. Sometimes there is a tearing down that goes on, a tearing down that we would rather be no part of. If we looked, if we examined, we might find that we might have been a part of it. But we'd like to think that we were not. We'd like to turn to Psalms, the 74th chapter. Reading from the 2nd to the 9th verses. And notice this. The word spoken. The psalmist says, remember the community thou didst win long ago, whom thou didst rescue to be thine own people. This hill of Zion, thine abode, turn thy steps toward the standing ruins, to all the havoc of the foe within the sanctuary. Thine enemies roared inside thy house, set up their emblems there. They smashed the doors down with their axes like woodmen felling trees. Then broke up all the carved work there with hatchet and with hammer. They set thy sanctuary ablaze, laying it low, profaning thine own dwelling. They said to themselves, let us root them up. So all the synagogues in the land they burned. Not an emblem of ours is to be seen. No prophet now. None knows when this will end. Examine what has been said here for a moment. What do we have? Enemies in Zion? That's what the scripture says. Whom thou didst rescue to be thine own people, this hill of Zion. Their enemies roared inside thy house. There were some that were not friends. They smashed the doors down with axes. They broke up all the carved work. With hatchet, with hammer. That's devastating work going on, brethren. What we observe is that not all were builders, not all build and plant. But some tear down, root out, pluck up. And that's what we want to be careful of. We want to be careful that by the Lord's grace, it is not us. And indeed, we can ask, Lord, is it I? We would like, by the Lord's grace, to be peacemakers. There are times when it is necessary. There are times when it is necessary to stand up, beat things that we would rather not, point out things that must needs be said. To do so, even though we know and realize and understand that we may get hurt. By nature, I'm a peaceful man. By nature, I am one who is fearful, just afraid. And any time there's any trouble or whatever, I'll go the other way. And lo and behold, if there's someone that I may have a little problem with or what have you, and I know that something is going to happen in that particular instance, that encounter, if you will, when they are coming this way, I go the other way. I've done that for years, brethren. I am one who is just fearful enough. It is much easier to take the easy way, the way whereby there is nothing stirred up. There's no waves, there's no problems. You don't have to encounter someone and a confrontation being there and then proceeding to point out what is right, regardless of what the results may be. I'm not that kind. Brethren, I'm willing to tell you that right now. But it is this which the Lord is trying to build in me. I believe, brethren, by the Lord's grace, slowly but surely, I am learning it. If you will observe the talks that I give, you will usually note that I give nothing that is controversial. If you again will listen to what I have to say, you will note that I speak nothing that would stir up, that would divide, and so on. Well, how come? Not necessarily because I'm trying to build up, but maybe more because I'm just trying to take the easy way out. The Lord be the judge thereof. But I would like to be, by the Lord's grace, a peacemaker in Zion. And I'm sure that we all would like to do the same. In the Ecclesia, we will find that it is necessary to have peacemakers. And what we think is ideal is that everybody is a peacemaker. That's just right. Sad to say, it is difficult for everyone to be a peacemaker in Zion. We would like to bring before your attention something that our beloved pastor wrote. If you think it was just good enough that I read it as he wrote it, because we feel that it would come across so much better than if I could explain it in my own words. What he had to say was found in the 2588 of the reprints. And it has to do with Beatitude number 7, Blessed are the peacemakers. Note his words. He says, very evidently, but a small number of the Lord's people have progressed so far as to have this grace markedly developed and exemplified in their lives, the grace of being peacemakers. The great majority, even of those who have named the name of Christ, seem to pursue a reverse course, which indicates that even if their hearts are pure and their sympathies large, they have still much to learn in the school of Christ. For instead of being peace promoters, they are strife promoters. Yet this is not of evil intent, but rather of habit and of ignorance and of failure to discern the wide difference between the divine course, that a course of love, and the opposite course of selfishness which prevails in the world. Strife making is chiefly stirred up with a tongue, though it may be aroused by a gesture or by a glance. Likewise, peacemaking is chiefly done with the tongue, though it is also may operate through the eye. How many Christian people we all know who have tongues which are continually stirring up strife, The adversary controls many in this manner long after they escaped from his control in many other respects. And this is largely because they do not detect that in this they are doing Satan's service. Do not even detect that they are stirrers up of strife, hatred, envy, malice, and planters of roots of bitterness by which many are defiled. Brethren, we speak not of us. I mean, we have never done anything like that. Or at least we would like to think so. Thing is, to be aware, to act accordingly. Brother Russell continues. When will Christians learn the length and breadth and depth of the injunctions, speak evil of no man, and let no corrupt communication proceed out of your mouth, but that which is good to the use of edifying? How long will it take some of God's true children to learn that in uttering an evil thing, even if they were positive of its truth, they may be doing a world of evil? How long will it take to learn that it is not always necessary to speak the truth? Now, that's quite a statement, brethren. That's something to think about. How long will it take to learn that it is not always necessary to speak the truth? Nor even proper to do so, except when it would be for the edifying of others. Ah, here it is. Speak the truth if it builds up. How many lessons, line upon line, must they have to convince them that they are not only to avoid gossip about other people's business and fault-finding and cynicism, but that all these are evidence of their deficiency in love, of their deficiency in the likeness of Christ, and their lack of the qualities of the peacemaker, and that these lacks need to be striven against earnestly if they would make their calling and election sure. Now he points out what to do is to take the fourth chapter of Philippians, where it speaks in the eighth verse, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are of good report, think on these things, then speak about these things, that will do the job. Then he said, such have a very precious promise, well worthy of their efforts. They shall be called the children of God. They have God's Spirit. The likeness of their dear Son has been traced in their hearts. They have been sanctified, set apart with the truth, and ultimately be meet for the inheritance of the saints in life. Only such at heart will the Lord ever recognize His sons and join heirs with His great Son, our Lord, in the kingdom. Moreover, this is a test which we may well recognize for ourselves particularly. Or anything that goes on in the class, any way that we may act. First, it begins with us. And to some extent, not only for ourselves, but each other, as evidencing the degree of our growth as children of God, our peaceable dispositions, and our carefulness to pursue such a course in life as will tend toward peace. He then had one other paragraph that I think well worth considering, because here's where it's all set. Some of the Lord's people find in themselves naturally considerable of a spirit of combativeness. Ah, yes. Spirit of combativeness unfavorable to peace. Indeed, it requires something of the spirit of combativeness to fight a good fight of faith against the world of flesh and the adversary, and to contend earnestly for the faith, so that those who have combativeness naturally find themselves in antagonism with others along some line continually. The way it is sometimes, brother, and Brother Russell pointing it out, it is so. However, they should not be discouraged by this, but should remember that combativeness is a valuable servant and soldier if turned and exercised in the right direction. Its exercise toward fellow creatures must be modified by mercy, by a realization of our own imperfections, and the imperfections of all. Combativeness must be trained to fight along the lines of love and mercy, to fight for the truth and for all the servants and agencies of the truth and against the error, but not against the blind and ignorant servants of the error. Combativeness must be given plenty to do in fighting against the imperfections and weakness of our own natures. And being thus busily engaged in this good work, it will find comparatively little time for assaulting others and realizing the difficulties connected with the conquering of self. It will have a greater compassion for the weaknesses of theirs. It's something to think about. It's something indeed to consider. But we come to one more quote of our beloved pastor. Something more to consider if indeed we are to play the role of peacemakers. This is found 4772 of the reprints. Under the heading of 1 Thessalonians 5:13, be at peace among yourselves. This is what the Apostle Paul had to say. Brother Russell said, because general discontent prevails in this our day, and because God's children, although not of the world, are in it, are influenced by it. Now, this is something we consider even now. General discontent in the world. Oh, it's as much up to date as when Brother Russell wrote it. He said, because of this general discontent, it becomes daily more necessary that each child of God shall be on the alert to keep his body under, to keep his tongue from murmuring, to keep his heart from discontent, to be filled with thankfulness and great gratitude to God in appreciation of all his benefits toward us. Bearing that in mind, he continues, additionally, the characters being called and drawn of the Lord during this gospel age must all be firm of texture. This is what I'm learning, brethren. This is what I found very difficult to do. This is what I never was, is firm of character. I've told some of the brethren, I'll tell you now, just to give you an idea, as far as the kind of a character that the Lord has taken, in my case, and tried to mold. I used to, before I came into the truth, go to ball games. I went to ball game, you name it, wherever. This particular time I was in Detroit, and I wanted to see a ball game there. And I was standing in line to get to the ticket window. And the one in front of me paid for his ticket and went on. And the man who took the money put it around so. And then I laid my money on the counter. And when the man who gives the tickets and takes the money, take the money, which I had put down there, put it right on, put her down, and then gives me a ticket and wants the money. What did I do? Brother and I paid for two tickets. Rather than create any scene of any kind. So that's the way it was with me. I didn't want to do it. When I was at a basketball game, I dropped a $10 bill. I hadn't realized at the time. I heard somebody say, I found a $10 bill. Well, rather than say, I think that's my $10 bill because I noted it was gone, I just let it go. Here again, that, brethren, is not firmness of texture, firmness of character at all. And this is that which the Lord wants. Strong characters. God seeketh such to be of His Son's bride and joint heirs. Their firmness, positiveness, is in contrast with the wavering, the weakness of others. Their weaknesses, through heredity, are as great as those of others. Hence, when a number of these are brought together, as in a class for Bible study, there is a great need of patient forbearance one with another. If differences and clashes come, and they will, the damage one to another is sure to be greater than with people of less character, of less positive convictions, of less determination. Consequently, these find the apostle word true. You have need of patience. With the truth, therefore, to this class God proposes, there shall also go the spirit of the truth, the spirit of holiness, the spirit of meekness, patience, long-suffering, brotherly kindness, love. Otherwise, serious friction and damage would result. He continues, if in any class of Bible students studies in the Scriptures be neglected, weakness, worldliness, love of pleasures, lack of zeal in the Lord's service, etc., are sure to manifest themselves. And if studies in the Scriptures are studied but not applied to the heart and life, the fruits of the Spirit will be deficient. Meekness, gentleness, etc. Every item of knowledge should be used as the foundation for soil in which further graces of the Spirit will be developed for the enrichment of the character of the new creature. The purpose. We study. For what purpose? To develop the fruits of the Spirit. Continuing, we have had occasion at times to call the attention of the classes to the fact that those chosen to be their servants, ministers, elders, are not to be recognized as their lords and are not to be upheld in any attempts to lord it over God's heritage, as we find in 1 Peter 5:3. He said, now on the other hand, we wish to call special attention to the fact that a hypercritical spirit might be found in the class. That's a possibility, which might lead some of the members to take a wrong attitude. It would evidently be just as contrary to the Lord's Spirit if the class were to lord it over the elders. They are to be beloved, to be upheld, to be appreciated, and if they have some imperfections, and they do have some imperfections, like other men, They are no less worthy of sympathy and forgiveness and exoneration. In proportion as the elders or ministers are faithful, humble, diligent in the service of the flock, they should have a hearty cooperation of every member of the class. Honor to whom honor is due, praise to whom praise is due. And again, you note his word, in proportion. So there's the key. Some of God's people, like some of the people of the world, take a hypercritical view of some trifling things, such, for example, as parliamentary usages in connection with meetings. He said this is one thing we need to remember. The Bible lays down no particular parliamentary usage, but gives to God's people the one broad general law to govern each one of them in all the affairs of the church. This law Christ gave us in John 13:34. A new commandment I give unto you, that you love one another as I have loved you. And take it from there. A liberty wherewith Christ is made free. Finally, let this law of love measure all of our relationships as God's people. Whether it be of those chosen to be elders or whether we do not, the law of love should be used to measure our every act, our every word, yea, our very thought. If we can all, dear brethren, have this rule continually in mind, it will save a great deal of friction, heart burning, heart aching. It will make us more like our blessed Master, better representatives of Him before each other, before the world. It will incline us to be as methodical and careful as possible, both in ourselves and in all that we do, and then lovingly, not to expect quite as much of others until after they shall have learned the beauty of the right way by observing our course. Let us be content, whatever the method adopted by the majority, if it expresses the will of the majority, however the conclusion may be reached. If we think the majority less wise than we, let us learn patience and wait, as the Lord does, until they learn the error of their course and amend it. In a word, let us each more and more seek to be peacemakers, or they shall be called the children of God. Peacemaker, peace promoters, peace lovers. Peace. A kind of peace that seeks to have the health, the safety, the soundness, the welfare, the friendship, the confidence, the completeness of those involved in mind. The peace, brethren, that we have from God. In our relationships to one another, in our dealings with one another, the amount of time we have met, whether it be a year, or 5 years, or 10 years, or whatever, probably we have done our share of and it's stirring things up a little bit. And we've tried to be as peaceful as we can. And we've tried to abide with one another indeed as best that we could. We would like very much to be peacemakers. I have something which I think is very good, something that we might be able to practice indeed in the matter, considering ourselves and our relationship to the class and the matter of our sincerity and what sacrifice is needed to make the class more healthy and so on. It was written by the pen of Ben Franklin, and he brought it out in such a way that I'd like to read it just as he put it, because it's something to consider. So there are two ways of being happy. Well, we like to consider it in the biblical way, the blessedness. And we like to feel that within our ecclesias, there is a blessedness, a happiness there, that we're sitting at the feet of Jesus and learning of Him. We could just look at it that way every time we came to meeting, what a precious thing it would be. So bear in mind in that way, in considering the two ways of being happy, that we may either diminish our wants or increase our means or augment them. That either will do. The result is the same. And it is for each man to decide for himself and to do that which happens to be the easiest. If you are idle or sick or poor, however hard it may be for you to diminish your wants, it will be harder to increase your means. If you are active and prosperous or young or in good health, it may be easier for you to increase your means than to diminish your wants. But if you are wise, you will do both at the same time. Young or old, rich or poor, sick or well. And if you are very wise, you will do both in such a way as to increase the general happiness of society. Consider it, brethren. And as I had given this talk in the class, Tom Gilbert spoke of something that I never occurred to me at the time, but this is what I want to point out here. It is brought out so very well. A part of a class. If indeed we could just diminish our wants and increase our means to help the class, wouldn't that be a precious thing? That's what it's all about, brethren. That's what is needed. And by so doing, the peacemakers. I have something here that we would like to think, or I would like to think at least, that we all at some time or other might be have the occasion and have a feeling within us to read to our brethren in the class. This is what peacemaking is all about. If we could stand before the class, speak and mean what we say, look at the brethren when we say it. To say, I love you. Sincerely. I love you not only for what you are, but for what I am when I am with you. I love you not only for what you have made of yourself, but for what you are making of me. I love you for the part of me that you bring out. I love you for passing over all the foolish and frivolous and weak which you cannot help seeing in me, and for bringing out all the beautiful and radiant that no one else looked quite far enough to find. I love you for ignoring the fool and weakling in me, and for laying firm hold on the possibilities of good. I love you for closing your eyes to the discord and for adding to the music. I love you because you are helping me to make of my life a temple and of my words a song. I love you because you are helping to make me good and because you have succeeded in making me happy. Blessed. You have done it all just by being you. That would be something, wouldn't it, brother? Let's look at 2 Corinthians, the 3rd chapter, the 11th verse. Second Corinthians 13:11. Finally, brethren, farewell. Be perfect. Be of good comfort. Be of one mind. Live in peace. And the God of love and peace shall be with you. The Master spoke to Israel, pronounced over them the words, "If thou had known at least in this thy day, the things that belong to thy peace." We would like to think by the Lord's grace that we know the things that belong to our peace. Note them again on the board. Health, safety, soundness, welfare, friendship, confidence, completeness. That which is part of the whole. Realizing and understanding these things and seeking by the Lord's grace that we might all be peacemakers in Zion, that indeed, blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the sons of God. So, brethren, I don't know what you call me if I stand up here and you ask me questions and I can't answer any of them. But as I understand that there is a 15-minute period for questions, if you have any questions to ask, I think probably what I can do is, when I get the questions, if there's some of the older brethren, I ask them to answer them. Anyone have a question? That's good. If you don't have any questions, I don't have to answer anything. I don't know whether you're afraid of me or whether you just think I don't know anything anyway. I would admit that. I don't, indeed. I don't want to be flattered to think that I said it all. Nothing need to be said. Here we have someone.
Could you elaborate on what you mean by the seventh element there, completeness?
Okay.
Elaborate on it.
Yes. The Hebrew word shalom, peace, and what it denotes, broader than what the peace we consider today, all these things which we have, the first six, if you please, it leaves nothing out. It's all there. It's all there as far as true peace is concerned. And it being a matter of all of them, what I simply did was wrap them all up by seventh, is saying the seventh is the sixth complete. This is what I had in mind. In other words, in presenting this, what I'm trying to point out is, and when we talk about peace, scripturally, considering it, what we are considering are all these things. That goes further, if you will, than arrest or peace insofar that there's no violence, or we can just say, sit serenely in the rocking chair or whatever. This goes far beyond that. Because for a matter of health or a matter of welfare, for example, that actually one to be healthy must work. Doesn't sit in a rocking chair, but to do something. And one whose welfare is one who this is taken care of. matter of God takes care of our welfare, but it is because we do something, because there is something that is done to prove that we deserve this kind of peace. That's what I had in mind anyway. Anyone else? Sister there? I'm not like our Jesuit. I don't know everybody, so I can't call your name.
I think that you made a statement, something about standing for...